I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top of the world, hey. Waiting on this for a while now. Paying my dues to the dirt. I've been waiting this
long. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour. My name is Jordan Gifkins. Alongside me is the infamous Jacob White. Hey, how are you?
Have a nice.
Already, we are not quite at the end of the episode yet, Jake. This is episode number 7, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
You're not, Jordan.
We have made it to 7 weeks through the podcast every Tuesday of the A-League season, Jake. Big week this week in football, Jake. We've got the FFA Cup replay to cast our eye over, not literally, but it was between the two teams, Jake. Wellington played their first game under a different coach, Ernie Merrick, obviously leaving his job last week. Western Sydney versus Victory. That was a big game. And
I had a nice.
Santa could not bring the presents for Western Sydney. That's a good one.
He had a bad.
And we've got the two other games of the round. Perth Glory hosting Newcastle and Brisbane versus Adelaide to have a look over. We start on Friday night, Jake. Sydney FC hosted a Melbourne City team. And it took 31 minutes here for City to take the lead with Brandan scoring a belter from outside the box. Must be said, it was a fantastic finish. Gave them the lead before a late penalty, controversially given to Sydney FC, after Brillante had got himself sent off for a second yellow card. Bobo scored from the spot and gave Sydney a equaliser in what was quite a topsy-turvy game of football, which Sydney probably dominated and deserved the win, but alas, it was a 1-1 draw, Jake. What was your take on the said fixture?
Well, as I've stated in the FFA Cup as well, they're the two teams that I hate most in the league by an absolute country mile. And I was happy it was a draw because they're both teams, obviously, Victory competing with. And I think it was a good game. Sydney did deserve the win, in my opinion. But at the same time, and this isn't me over-exaggerating because I don't like them, they should have been down to 8 men. They got a red card. Brillante got a red card. Bobo got a yellow card, which should have been a red. And Simon got a yellow card, which should have been a red. So, realistically, they got away with that. And Bobo's penalty was a bit controversial, as you said. But at the same time, I think if the refs are staying consistent, as they are being consistent in probably the worst way possible this season. It had to be given, though, because like I know that he's gone down very easily, but if you look from the front camera, he's been impeded still. Like I know that it was very, very, very minimal contact, but at the same time, he's still got an arm across him. It's still, in my opinion, a penalty. A very soft penalty, but it's still a penalty, in my opinion. But again, it's disappointing that a City game has been marred by a bit of antics by a player going down a bit easily, Jordan. Although this is a City game, this was a City player doing it this time and not an opposition player for City. But instead of focusing on City being involved in good games, and both the last two games they've been involved in has had a lot of controversy and it's been one of the better games to watch in both those games, it's been marred by players going a bit over the top with a bit of diving, Jordan. This time it's Brandan, who I've not been a fan of since he stepped foot in Australia. He's a good player on the ball.
Shit haircut.
Yeah, shit haircut. But he's a fantastic player on the ball, and he brings a lot of positives for the City faithful, if that's what you want to call them. But he brings a lot of negatives as well for the A-League, in my opinion, with a lot of diving, a lot of overreactions to little things, and I reckon he should be getting, not just because we have the derby this week, but I think he should be having a bit of a stint on the sidelines for his bullshit.
Realistically, Jake, I know that the FFA and a lot of the, you know, supporters, or pretty much all supporters, hate seeing you know, players going down easy. Like, you saw the Jaden North incident last week, which yeah. made City's, you know, contest with them. And like you said, it made this one as well with his dive from Grant, you know, touching his face and then going, you know, roly-poly on the ground. But I think what the FFA need to do to stamp this out is, you know, start, you know, giving out bans for players that do go over the top with these sort of things. You know, we've seen, I know you've told me a few times about this player, Isaias from Adelaide, is a big player who does this. Like we saw Jade North, albeit he's not the type of player that normally does it. He did it last week. Brandan's done it a few times. These players need to understand that if they do this and mare, you know, the Australian game, it's gonna have consequences because they can't just keep getting away with these sort of things.
Yeah, well, this isn't me being biased anyway because Berisha has dived to win a championship for his team before, and I love Berisha. And Archie Thompson, I can definitely pinpoint a fair few times that he dived to get penalties for victory. So it's not me being biased and saying Brandan's a twat because he plays for City, because it's happening all over the A-League. And I was happy at the start of this season in the English Premier League when they said that they would start stamping down on diving and start handing out suspensions. But I've been watching the Premier League a fair bit and there's been a lot of diving. Not one suspension has been given out for diving. And it's just not needed. Just get up and play the game. You're there to play a game. You're not there to try and get other people sent off. You're not there to roll around on the ground when you're not injured. Because then when players are seriously injured, there's fans in the stands that don't take it serious and think that they're not actually injured.
Yeah.
So, like...
And we can relate. We can relate to that. Because, I mean, we're, you know, Socceroos watchers, and we often travel to other Asian countries and we see their players rolling around all the time. And we just completely take the mickey out of them because we are so used to seeing them do that pretty much all game long because they want to get a point against us or get a win against us. And
yeah, exactly.
And every time, you know, a player might go down with an ACL injury, but we're taking the mickey out of him because we're so used to him just rolling around.
So. And now the whole, like, a lot of the league are used, everyone's used to Brandan rolling around now. What if this week in the derby, there's a pretty harsh tackle on him and he does his ACL? But all the Victory fans in the stands think he's taken a dive, but he's actually on the ground in excruciating pain. No one will take it serious because everyone will think he's gone down cheaply again.
Mm.
No one will think he's actually injured.
And if he gets hurt by that, it's his own fault. Like, yeah. I mean, his feelings hurt by, you know, players laughing at him or booing him or something.
He's brought it on himself.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't want to sit here and talk down on the A-League and talk down on football in general about diving because I hate seeing AFL fans and NRL fans because I love both sports, but I hate seeing those fans getting stuck into Australian football calling footballers a bunch of pussies and stuff like that because they're diving because there's 2 to 3 players in every league that are known for diving.
Mm.
And they're going to just say, oh, the whole of the A-League, just a bunch of diving pussies.
Yeah.
Well, it just brings like a
very,
bad name on
very
it.
Very small minority.
Mm.
I just want to touch on one more thing in this game. Rion Tongyik made his starting debut for Melbourne City at the central defensive position. Jake, how did you find his game?
It took a while for him to get into the game. It, like, not in the way of like getting a touch of the ball and stuff, like actually get his head into the game. Because he was struggling. I reckon Sydney identified it as well, but it was obviously his debut, and he was struggling the first 20 to 30 minutes. But overall, he played well, in my opinion. He made a fair few good tackles. He's a big boy, so he's making his presence felt. Like I said, it took him a while to get into the game, but once he was into the game and got his feet on the ground and knew what he was doing realistically and started adjusting to the pace of the game, I reckon he was pretty good.
Mm, it was good for him to receive his chance to stamp his mark on the A-League as well. He's come across from Adelaide United last year without getting a gig. He won the Youth Player of the Year, and it's good to see him, you know, at least, even if it's just the one game for now, at least get an opportunity at A-League level. So, only 19 years old, born in Sudan. Don't know if he can represent Australia or not, but... maybe one to look for at the future. Another Thomas Deng, without being racist. moving on to Wellington Phoenix versus Central Coast Mariners. Wellington having a tough week with the loss of Ernie Merrick. They didn't show it on the pitch, though. It took about a minute and a half to open the scoring here against Central Coast. Hamish Watson doing so in fine fashion. Vince Leah then scored probably the goal of the round with a superb strike from about 25 yards. That probably caught him by surprise, to be honest. before Roy Krishna, the Fijian monkey, just signed it off with a 3-0 win in the 95th minute on the break. Had a tap in. Easy does it. 3-0. Easy win, really, for Wellington. Central Coast didn't really show too much, wasn't too resilient. And Wellington probably could have had a few more at that, Jake.
Yeah, well, they deserve the win. I was annoyed watching this game because I obviously am a big fan of Ernie Merrick. And as much as it's good for the club and stuff that they've picked up 3 points and they played well, it pisses me off because where was that when Ernie Merrick was manager?
Hmm.
And I don't think that's not to reflect Ernie as a manager. I don't think that he's left and now they've turned up and played some good football. But I think maybe the Wellington squad needed that kick up the arse. Because I've heard that there were players in tears in Adelaide when Ernie when he said to the squad that he was going to leave and stuff, and apparently players were in tears. And Glenn Moss apparently stood up and said, "This is our fault, this is on us." And well, at least they've turned up and they've played some good football. And I think this is the worst game I've seen Mariners play this season. I know they lost 4-0 to Sydney, but they were still decent in that game. I think they were never in this game at all. Wellington dominated majority of it. Mariners did have a lot more of the ball, but never did anything with it, really. And then, yeah, Vinny Leah popped up for his fourth goal for Wellington in over 200 games. So he's not exactly renowned for his goal scoring. Well, his fourth A-League goal in 230 A-League games, so...
What a player.
Yeah, he's not exactly known for his goal scoring. I do remember him being a Victory player. He is from Shepparton. So, I don't know why I've added that in, but he is from Shepparton.
Are you just looking at his profile and...
No, I'm literally just looking at his Wikipedia page right now. but yeah, I think Wellington played well. That's easily the best Wellington... performance this season, and it's the worst Central Coast performance this season, so it was always going to be a 3-0 or 4-0 if those two teams were playing like that. And it's concerning for Central Coast because that's two big losses in a row. They lost 4-1 to Western Sydney last week, now it's 3-0 to Wellington. So they've got off to a good start to their season, but I think that they could potentially get into a bit of a form slump. Maybe, because I do have a pretty red-hot Brisbane next week as well, although it is in Gosford. If they lose that one, if Brisbane win that convincingly as well, you could see Central Coast keep on dropping down the table.
Realistically, I think this year for Central Coast, like, it's evident they're going out most weeks playing a very inexperienced side. I think that they're realistically just getting a lot of games into their young players. I think if they can keep their core... squad for maybe, you know, two or three more years, they're consistently playing together. And the same goes, in my opinion, for Newcastle as well. I reckon there'll be a force in maybe 2-3 years. They've got, you know, the young players, Connor Payne, Liam Rose, Adam Berry, Galloway on the left now is still young, McGing, Ascroft, Storm Rue, Paul Izzo, you know, all under about 23 years old, and they're all consistently playing in the A-League, I think. And Trent Bahaja, of course, signed a contract this week.
And that's one. How harsh is that? Like, I know he caught four, but Paul Izzo getting dropped.
I'm speaking to my mum about this. I feel like she told me that he got injured in the warm-up, potentially.
Well, he must have, because he's been, in my opinion, he's been... one of the best keepers this season. Although he is still copping a fair few goals, he's conceded the most shots at goal in the last two seasons. Last season, he made the second or third most saves in the league, although he was copping about 20 shots a goal every single week last season. I think that's a bit hard. Like, if he's been dropped on form, that's harsh, but if he's been dropped because he picked up a knock, then obviously that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think that is the reason, but like, I'm not exactly certain. I guess we'll find out if he comes back into the team next week. Not really like Ivan Nesevsky staked any claims or anything. Moving on here to Saturday night, Western Sydney Wanderers found it tough at home against a absolutely outstanding Melbourne Victory side. Albeit Western Sydney were actually not too bad in this game. I think it was just a case of Victory realistically taking a majority of their chances, as opposed to Western Sydney not really taking their chances. And it showed with a 3-0 scoreline, Bessar Barisha scoring the perfect hat-trick, one with his left, one with his right, and a header to cap off a fine performance from him. Realistically, I mean, like I said, I think it was just a case in this game of each team, or one team taking their chances as opposed to the other. I think Lawrence Thomas was absolutely sensational, making, you know, four or five top-quality saves. And you look down the other end of the pitch, you got Andrew Redmayne in goal for Western Sydney. Doesn't really bode the defence with too much confidence, albeit he did make a pretty sensational save late on to Jai Ingham. I think he's definitely at fault for the first one.
Yeah, definitely.
But in saying that, Jake, you obviously are a Melbourne Victory supporter. You probably watched this a little bit more in-depth than I did, and can probably compare more so than I can to past performances. Jake, so how did you find this game?
Well, you were at the Western Sydney versus Melbourne game in Melbourne a few weeks ago with me as well.
I was,
Jake. And honestly, that result and the result this weekend as well, they'll probably be our two worst performances by the Derby this season. So it's a bit weird that we're winning 3-0 two times this season against Western Sydney, and they've arguably been our two worst performances this season. I'm not saying we played horrible, but we didn't play fantastic. I think the scoreline definitely flattered us. But as you said, and as I've said a fair bit in our podcast this year, it's all about taking your chances. And when you put someone as deadly as Barisha up front, he's going to take his chances. Mm. So, and that Bozza said the exact same thing yesterday as well, last night as well, saying they're probably the two worst 3-0 wins Victory have put on in recent history, because we haven't played fantastic, but at the same time, you take it, obviously, because we're not playing fantastic and we get results. But then it's sort of frustrating because last week against Perth, we played fantastic and we drew. So I guess that's something we sure have to work out. But Western Sydney just keep on proving that they need... But it's nothing against Santelab, because Santelab is a decent striker. But I think they keep on proving that they need someone like a Robbie Keane or a Dimitar Berbatov or something like that up top. Because if they get a player like that, then I honestly have them as a top four team. Because, and yesterday emphasised it as well, Nico Martinez is one of the best players in the A-League.
He played very well as well on Saturday night. I thought he was sensational. Yeah. Just didn't have any support around him.
He was above and beyond Western Sydney's best player by an absolute country mile, and he is every single week. And that's nothing against other Western Sydney players, because I think they have a pretty good midfield with Martinez, Nichols, Jumpai and Dimas. That's a pretty good midfield. But Martinez just keeps on doing everything right. Even yesterday, I can't remember one thing that he realistically did wrong. He wasn't at fault for anything they did. And if it was a game of FIFA and you're looking at statistics, he probably made about 7 or 8 key passes yesterday.
Yeah.
So he's a fantastic player, and I've said that a lot this season so far. I don't know where they've picked him up from, but it's been a fantastic signing. So if they can get a player like a Berbatov or a Keane or something like that to finish off all those chances that players like Nichols, Jumpai and Martinez are creating, then that'd be a fantastic team. But until they get that, they're going to keep on sticking around that 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th sort of position, and will be fighting for a top 6 spot because they haven't recruited players that they need to be recruiting.
Yeah, I think you said it, Robbie Keane. I reckon Robbie Keane's got to be that player that they just need to, you know, try their best to get him, because if you have him next to Jumpai Nichols and Nico Martinez, I can see that being an absolutely fantastic front four. I think it might scare a few people. Just on Nico Martinez, he is on loan from Olympiacos at the moment.
That's probably why he's so good.
Yeah, so he's had a few stints at different clubs. He's only 29 years old, so he's still sort of in his prime of his career. But he's played at Real Murcia. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Olympiacos. He's never played a game for Olympiacos, but he is on loan. Independiente. I'm not too sure how to pronounce these. These are pretty sure these are all Argentinian first division teams. But he's, yeah, he's not a noted goal scorer, but he's scored 2 in 10 at Western Sydney, so get around him. Lawrence Thomas, Jake, in my opinion, was far busier of the goalkeepers in this game. In my opinion, behind Berisha, he was easily the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, boy. Well, I wouldn't say by a mile, but he was fantastic. And I think that he is really, really pushing for a Socceroos call-up. I think Matt Ryan is obviously the best keeper, the best Australian keeper, and then you've got Langerak and stuff, but I don't see why they wouldn't give Lawrence Thomas a crack in a Socceroos squad, because he's not like he's old. Like, I know people may think he's getting older and stuff because he's been at Victory for 6 seasons, but he's only 24 years old. He's still got a lot ahead of him, and some of the saves he was making yesterday and some of the saves he's made this season are out of this world. I think although we do still leak a few goals in our defence, he's still a little bit questionable. I think he's been the best keeper in the A-League over the last 2 seasons when given the chance. Like, the last season we had Vukovic as our number one for some unknown reason, and then when he got his chance, you know, the season before that, when Nathan Coe got injured, he took it with both hands and basically led us to a championship.
Yep.
He some of the saves he's pulling off this season, fantastic, and it proved it yesterday with the save that he had off Clisby. I didn't think that he saved it at first. I thought it just it was a shot from Clisby and it hit the post, but
he it showed. Clisby twice.
if he didn't get that little touch onto it, then Clisby scores probably twice. So, and then, like, I know he didn't really move much for it, but then that Santelab chance that Santelab had from about 3 yards out as well. So it's fantastic to finally have a good keeper at Victory as well, because we haven't really had one since the Okotos left about 7 seasons ago. So
it's a fair stretch in me saying I feel like Lawrence Thomas has pretty much got you the 3 points. Yeah, I know it's like it was a 3-0 scoreline, but if 100%. He's not in form and he's not playing the way he is, there is a huge chance that a player, for example, like last season, like a Vukovic or a Nathan Coe, albeit Nathan Coe obviously wasn't the best keeper and Vukovic was a little inconsistent. I feel like if they were in goals as opposed to Lawrence Thomas, it could have potentially been, you know, 2-3 goals to Western Sydney. 100%. So,
and that's nothing against Vukovic and Coe as keepers. That's just proving how good Thomas is. Like, Vukovic is a good goalkeeper. I'm not going to sit here and say shit. He was average for us, but he is a goalkeeper. And so was Nathan Coe when he was with us, although his decision-making was very, very questionable. He was a very good shot stopper. But Nathan Coe, I think, is the complete keeper for an A-League team. He saves shots, obviously. You need a keeper to be doing that. He commands his area, and I think he's got the best distribution in the A-League by an absolute mile.
Easily.
So it's everything you want in a keeper, especially everything you want in a team that tries to play fast counter-attacking football. So I'm very impressed with him because he was a lot of fans didn't like him. A few years ago at Victory, a lot of our fans did not like him at all because of a few derby results that went against us. He made a few errors in those derbies, but he went back to youth league and he sat on the bench for a few seasons and stuff like that, and then got his chance late in that season where we won the title, and he's taken his chance with both hands ever since, and I couldn't be happier for the lad.
He might get a mention a little bit later on in the podcast, as there is a little topic we will talk about. I haven't mentioned to you, Jake, so I'll leave you on your toes.
I am. Topics. Topics.
On the last game here on Saturday night, Perth Glory hosting Newcastle Jets, and a surprising result, but if you watch this game, it would not surprise you whatsoever. Perth Glory took the lead through a brilliant Marinkovic strike on 7 minutes, just finessing it from the edge of the box into the top corner. Nothing that Jack Duncan could do, but Andrew Hall, in the 21st minute, took his only chance, well, not only chance, he's the only chance he could bury, because he had about 15, put it past Liam Reddy, gave him the 1-1 before. I'm not going to try for it. What's his name? Smiljanic?
Yeah, look, I'm not
going. Discord own goal for Newcastle Jets. Right on the cusp of half time, but it was not like it was undeserving. Newcastle absolutely destroying Perth Glory here, and very surprising, considering, you know, you've said it so often, well, not so often, but a fair few times here, that Newcastle are pretty much dog shit, in your opinion. We've seen them live at Melbourne Victory, and they looked like shit. We've seen them a few results throughout down the season so far, and they've been pretty average. But it just seemed like this game against Perth, it just clicked for them. They had a, obviously still lacking that striker, but that front three of Naboo, Klut and Hull was absolutely amazing. They were all clicking with each other, and the exciting part about that is they're all, well, I'm not exactly certain on ages, but I'm pretty sure they're all under the age of 23. Like, Naboo's 23, Hull's 21, 22, maybe 23, and Devane Klut's only about 20 years old. So, I think, in my opinion, Newcastle came out and played easily the best game I've seen them play in probably the last two, three seasons of the A-League. So,
yeah, it was fantastic how they played. And like you said, it was probably the best they've played in a few seasons as well. And I think they're in a very, very similar situation to Central Coast, where they've got a young-ish team and the talent's there, but it's all about clicking on certain days. There's going to be days where they're going to get absolutely destroyed by the top teams in the league. There's going to be days where they show really good sparks and they win games convincingly. So, fair play to them, and it's their first. I don't know how this has happened, because they've both been in the league from season one. This is the first time Newcastle have won in Perth since season one, which is outrageous, considering you have to, they would have had to travel to Perth at least once or twice every single season.
Jake's football facts.
When you put it into perspective, that's over 4,000 days as well without a win in Perth, so that's a pretty lengthy stretch without a win, but fair play to them. They've gone to Perth and they've shown Victory up as well, to be honest, because Victory absolutely dominated Perth last week. Couldn't get the choppies, and now Newcastle dominate Perth in Perth and get the choppies, and they probably should have won by more as well. So it's good news for them, especially when there's players, and I know that you are a massive fan of Devane Klut, Andy's girlfriend. and obviously I don't think I've ever said a horrible word of him, but I've always rated, in a sense, Andrew Naboo. And Andrew Hall's a reasonably good player as well. And so they've got talent throughout their squad. It's just a matter of clicking, and it clicked yesterday. They should have won by more, in my opinion. And I think that's also credit to Liam Reddy, who I think that was probably the best performance I've seen Liam Reddy play in a fair while as well. Although he did have a good performance against Victory last week, it wasn't exactly like he was making outrageous saves to stop them. Victory were basically just stopping themselves. But he pulled off some fantastic saves in this game, and if it wasn't for him, it could have genuinely ended about 5-1 or 6-1, because there were a lot of chances that Newcastle should have definitely put the game to bed.
Yeah, well, he's made 10 saves yesterday, so... he's only made 29 saves this season, and he's made 10 of those in one game. So, yeah, get around him. Jake, I don't know really if you can really tell me, because I don't know if anyone can really tell anyone, but what happened to Perth yesterday? They're at home. It's not like they've had a massive travel. Well, they've had a little bit of a travel, obviously, they do every week, but they're at home. They should be getting the win against a lowly Newcastle side that's been struggling for results. And like fair play, like we've mentioned, Newcastle played out of their socks and did brilliantly. But Perth just didn't look like they got out of first gear. They started all right. They got the first goal, great goal, and then from there it was so stagnant and no one offered anything. You know, Andy Keogh and Adam Taggart as a strike force for any side would be buzzing, but
yeah,
they just didn't do anything. Marinkovic in midfield scored the goal, but apart from that, didn't do anything. Chris Harrell didn't look, you know, like his usual self. Josh Risden, in my opinion, was Perth's best player, but even he probably wasn't at his best. And Shane Lowry, an Australian international from a few years ago, played it overseas for a few seasons as well, and he didn't look like a player that had done that. So I just don't know, Jake.
It doesn't make all that much sense to me, because I've got them in my top four for this season. At the start of the season, I had them in my top four.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what's happening with them. I know that
they've obviously had a bad run with injuries and suspensions and all that, but I think that game last night proves how important Diego Castro is to them. And Diego Castro obviously would be important to any A-League team, but it doesn't really make all that much sense to me because, like you said, Tagan Keogh is still a pretty solid strike force, and Marinkovic has been one of the better number 10s in the A-League over the last few seasons as well. And then you've got Lowry and Williams and Risden in your back four. They're three players who could slot into a fair few A-League team.
And they've all got Socceroos experience.
Exactly. And Liam Reddy was the one that was saving them.
Hmm.
And across their midfield as well, they've got Marinkovic, they've got Harold. Harold's a decent player. I don't rate him that highly, but I think he's a decent player. And you've got Griffiths, who's, I think, is a pretty solid defensive midfielder. I don't know about the other bloke, the guy who scored the own goal. But it doesn't make sense to me because they've got a good, they've got a great team. They've got a top four team, in my opinion, especially a team like Perth, who pride themselves on a home record, who are always a really good team at home. And then arguably the worst team in the league comes to their home ground. And there's 10,000 people in the stadium there watching a training session.
Hmm.
It doesn't make all that much sense to me because Perth had a good team, and like I said, I had them in my top four this season to finish in top four, and they're doing the exact opposite. And if they don't pick it up sooner rather than later, there's going to be teams like Western Sydney who could overtake them, because if Western Sydney start clicking, Perth could drop even further. And then Wellington could potentially start clicking soon, like if they consistently play like they did yesterday. And then you've got Adelaide, who are good, but they don't seem like they're going to click this season. So if they're careful, they may miss the finals. And with a team like that, when they've got a fortress like they do at NIB Stadium, they shouldn't be missing the finals at all. So it's something they need to work out sooner rather than later, because if they don't, then they may even miss the finals.
Well, they're not entrenched at all in the top six. They've got Sydney, City, Victory and Raw are all, you know, pretty clearly into the top six. But you've got Perth on 12 points. And you've got Western Sydney, who take up sixth position, 1 point below them. But then you have Newcastle, Wellington and Central Coast are just one win behind Perth. So it's not like, I know you say Perth are in their top four, but it's not like they're completely outplaying teams like Newcastle, Wellington and Central Coast. So, you know, a brief dip in form, and maybe Newcastle can, you know, go on from that win on Saturday night, and Wellington got the win on Saturday, and Central Coast, albeit struggled against Wellington. If they can, you know, reproduce some of the form that they've had so far this season, they could be finding Perth in that, you know, bottom and trenches of the league. So, I don't know. Tough season this Sun. I like it. It's good. Moving on to the last round of the round. Brisbane Roar, totally destructive performance of Adelaide United. Albeit, it's not, like you said, it wasn't, well, I mean, you haven't said it on the podcast, you said to me, because I didn't watch the game. It wasn't probably a 4-0 scoreline, but at the end of the day, Brisbane scored 4, Adelaide scored 0. That's how it ended. Christensen scored 2 in 2 minutes, in the 28th and the 30th minute, to give Brisbane Roar a commanding lead going into halftime. Thomas Broich scored a well-taken header in the 55th minute before Jamie McLaren scored in the 85th minute from the penalty spot, to give Brisbane Roar a 4-0 win. And my bet 365 bet of the week came off. So,
did you bet on it?
Yeah, Jake. No. Adelaide United still sitting bottom of the table. They just can't get a break at the moment. Tommy Orr, been well documented that he needs to turn it on this season because he has been struggling. He got 2 assists. The second, controversially, as you have told me, it was offside and I saw it and it was very tight. But Brisbane Roar's defence, doing very well as they have been all season. Jake, what was your take on the game?
It was a game that Brisbane needed because obviously before this game they drew 1-1 like 4 games in a row. So it was a game they needed to take with both hands and get the 3 points, and obviously they've done that. But it was similar to Western Sydney versus Victory, not in the sense that there was a lot of chances created, but in the sense where one team dominated on the scoreline, but they didn't dominate on the pitch. So it's like Brisbane will obviously take it. They've gone against, up against the defending champions and they've won 4-0. But if they play like that against teams like Victory, Sydney or City, they would definitely not be going anywhere near a 4-0 scoreline. But in saying that, I think that just proves how poor Adelaide are at the moment. And I think they need to work that out quick smart as well, because if they keep on losing, then they're going to be nowhere near the finals this season, which I think is an absolute embarrassment. If you're defending your title, you should at least minimum be making the finals. And that's coming from a Victory supporter who last season we defended our title by finishing sixth, and a few, I think it was in season three, we defended our title by missing the finals. So I think it's pathetic if you defend your title and not even go making the finals. And so they've got to work that out quickly, because they've got, like Perth as well, they've got the talent, but it's a matter of putting it on show.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they probably, I don't even know. They definitely need to make the finals, I think, would be very embarrassing for them. Especially as it sits now, they're just bottom of the table, not much going for them. I think they definitely need a bit of a form jump, to say the least, Jake. In saying that, they're only 5 points outside of the top six, so a little turnaround here, and a couple of teams dropping some points could see them move up into that top six at some stage. Can they do what they did last season, Jake? Maybe not.
No.
Anyway, that is all the games for the round. I'll quickly go through the table. As we've said, Sydney FC remain undefeated with 10 from 10 games, so 7 wins and 3 draws, 24 points. Melbourne City in second position on 18 points. Melbourne Victory in third with a game in hand on 17 points. Brisbane Roar in fourth on 17 points. A very tight positions there between 2 and 4. Sydney FC obviously very commanding so far. Perth Glory, as we've said, on 12 points in fifth, moving closer and closer to that bottom for Western Sydney in the sixth position on 11 points. Newcastle, with their win, jump up to seventh position on 9 points. Wellington Phoenix, also with their win, are now 8th on the table with 9 points. Central Coast drop down to 9th with 9 points. And Adelaide United sit at the bottom of the table with the 1 win from 10 and 6 points. Jake, so very, very tight table all around, really. Shut up. Moving on to the individuals, Bessart Berisha with his hat-trick on the weekend does move into first place on the Golden Boot with 8 goals. Andy Keogh and Bruno Fornaroli have 7. And Roy, the Fijian monkey Krishna, has 6 goals for the season. In the assist chart, Marco Rojas stays out on top with 5. Mitch Nichols in second place with 4. And 3 to Ninkovic, Martinez, Nabu, Matt Simon, Fernando Brandan, Chris Harold, and Bruce Kamau. That's all the stats we're going to go through, Jake. It is now time for our favourite segment. Oh, I don't know really if it's our favourite segment, but it is time for the JJ's Football Fix Player of the Season. Jake, who is your number one vote going to in this week?
My number one vote this week, Jordan, and this is probably going to be a very biased player of the season sort of vote tally this week, but my number one vote this week goes to Christensen. I think he was class for Brisbane again. And as I said to you on the phone, he's had 7 shots in the A-League this season. He's scored 4 goals. And he scored 2 pretty good goals today as well. And that's definitely a far cry from Troisi's shot-to-goal tally. So he gets my one vote just because Brisbane, one of those teams that they should probably be finishing top four now this season with the start of the season they've had, but they've got to start putting performances on the board. And Christensen definitely helped with that today.
Yes, I'm also going to give him one vote. If I watched the game, I might have given him more, but because I didn't really watch the game, I can't comment on his overall performance, but I'm also giving him a vote just because I saw his goals very well taken, and he's been quite a good player for Brisbane Roar this season. It's good to see him getting his goals. Now, as you said, 4 goals in 7 shots, so it's a decent return. Jake, who's your 2 votes going to?
My 2 votes go to the man, the perfect man. Man, they've got the perfect hat trick, and he has the perfect everything. He's a beautiful man. Bessart Berisha. He's copped a fair bit of criticism over the last week for not taking his chances, and a fair few people are saying that he has passed it. But yeah, being top of the Golden Boot is not bad for someone who's apparently passed it, Jordan, so he gets my hat trick.
Jake, my two votes this week is going to the man who has a very attractive missus, in my opinion. Devante Klut, he was phenomenal, as the late Roberto Martinez would say, although he has not passed away, but he is the late Roberto Martinez.
One good wish.
He was fantastic. I kind of feel like he's playing that sort of centre forward false nine sort of position. In my opinion, he's doing it to perfection. He was linking up play from midfield to attack. He was really complimented by Andrew Nabu this week. I think this was easily his best game of the season. And it was evident with Andrew Nabu really helping him out. Andrew Hall was rotating. And that front three was very, very, you know, very good. I think Andrew Hall could have had a hat-trick. If he did, I think I would have given him votes, but he didn't. Devante Klut, though, was the best player in a Newcastle team that really did well over in Perth. So he gets my two. Jake, who was your best player this week?
Well, just on Devante Klut for a second. We were saying at the start of the season that it'd be a big loss for Brisbane, for Klut leaving Brisbane, because we both have rated him from his first game. I think it was against Liverpool, where he almost scored two worldies.
And then he did against bloody Real Sociedad a week later.
Yeah. So, I think it's worked out for both parties. I think Klut's getting consistent minutes at Newcastle and is proving his worth. And I don't, as much as I think he's going to be class and stuff, I don't think he'd be getting too many minutes at Brisbane. So I think it's worked out pretty well for both parties in the end. I know Brisbane will probably eventually want him back, or will not be happy with. I wouldn't say they won't be happy with how good he's going, but I think he would add a fair bit to Brisbane's attack right now as well. Not that they really need it, because they've just scored four goals, but I think he's probably better than players like Petratos. So, yeah, just on Klut, I'm pretty happy that he's got the move to Newcastle, because now he's proving his worth and proving that he could be a potential Sovereign Regal.
Hopefully.
So my three votes go to the man between the big sticks for Melbourne Victory. I'm not usually one. I know that I have done it a bit this season, but I'm not usually one to give the goalkeepers too many plaudits. I don't think they get the recognition that they really do deserve by people, by pundits, by anyone really. They do have the toughest job in football, and you have to be pretty mental to be a goalkeeper, Jordan. but yeah, he was fantastic, and like you said, he probably, although we did score three goals, Olivier did score three goals, I think Thomas saved a lot more than three goals. He was fantastic, and he gets my three votes for this week.
Yeah, he would have got a vote for me if Christensen didn't score twice today. Because he was probably, in my opinion, the fourth best player of the round. Very close.
Well, Reddy gets an honourable mention for me as well, because Reddy was very good yesterday as well.
I think it's going to be no surprise who I give my three votes to, because you can't really ignore someone that puts three goals in the back of the net with a perfect hat-trick. Besar Berishard does get my player of the round. Pretty self-explanatory. Three goals. The first, a poacher's goal. The second, you know, just a bullet header. And the third was just, again, sort of a poacher's sort of goal. He just predicted what was going to happen and made the movement before the defenders, and then brilliant finish the outside of the foot. I think you can't really
three shots, it. Three goals, short, not bad.
Yeah, you can't really
for someone who's apparently passed it.
He's not passed it. He still has at least two more seasons at his very best level, in my opinion.
Well, he's on 89 goals as well, so he's one off Archie's record.
And 11 off 100, Jake.
Yeah. Do you reckon he could get up to 100 this season? That'd be a 19-goal
season. I reckon he's probably capable of doing it.
He'd probably just get on to 100, probably.
Yeah, if he doesn't get it this season, he'll get it early next season.
100%.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, yeah, that's the player of the season for this week. Jake, we'll just go through the leaderboard for that. Marco Rojas still leads all comers on 9 votes for the season. Bressart Berisha, yep, he moves up into equal second with 8 votes on the season, alongside Michael Theo, who has 8 votes. And on 7, we have Luke De Vier, who has been a rock-solid defender.
He was good today as well. Very good.
Brisbane this season. Plenty of players sit on 6, most notably Nico Martinez and Ninkovic, as they move their way up the ladder. And I'm sure they'll be close to the top come the end of the season, Jake, because they are two class players who can turn games on their heads at any moment in time. I tell you, we have a bit of a discussion point today. We do. And it is... We can probably talk about it for a little bit. We won't spend too long on it before we go into the preview in about 10 minutes' time. But, Jake, I just want to touch on this. And I want to go through every club here in the A-League. And I want you to tell me who you think from each club should be playing in Europe within the next two seasons. Or two or three seasons. I want you to tell me.
And I'll, so not I'll, you?
Oh, I could. Oh, yeah, I might actually. Fuck it. But I want you to tell me from each team, and we'll start with A, with Adelaide, which players from those, well, maybe not two, we'll just go, which players do you reckon can potentially move on into European football at some stage in their career?
From Adelaide, it's difficult because Adelaide have been very average this season, but they've still got decent players. But majority of their good players are edging on to the later stages of their career. But if I have to choose one player from Adelaide who I think could not exactly crack it in Europe, like not have a massive go, but he could get into a European club and get some consistent minutes, is Ben Gruccio. He's been playing most weeks for Adelaide, mostly 90 minutes every single week for Adelaide, and it was pretty good today against Brisbane as well. And I think if he just keeps on getting those minutes and you get a consistent season or two into him, I think he could start getting a bit of notice from a few clubs around Europe, like maybe even a League 2 side in England or something like that, League 1 side in England.
He's been good this season, Gruccio. He's not been too bad defensively. He's obviously been up against it, you know, having sitting at the bottom of the table. I mean, obviously going to be up against it. But he's assisted twice, which is always nice to see from a fullback. And not only that, he can also play in the centre of defence. So he's got a little bit of versatility about him defensively. I think he's got a promising future. I agree with you, Jake. I reckon he could probably move into Europe in the next couple of seasons, I reckon.
Let's hope so. So yeah, that's my guy from player from Adelaide.
He can also play midfield as well.
Yeah, he played midfield a bit for City, didn't he?
I think he played on the wing, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. Fuck, do I want to say someone from Adelaide? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'll say a different name. I'm not even sure if this guy's really going to get much of a crack at Adelaide, but I feel like if you got a crack at Adelaide, like a solid run of games, just based off the little I've seen of him, I reckon he could probably improve a fair amount. But that player is, in my opinion, Riley McGree. Now, he's a youngster, and probably, I don't know if you've heard of him. A lot of people haven't heard of him. But he's just a solid, you know, smart player, centre midfielder. Has only played the 5 games this season, but when he's played, he's showed signs of class that a young Danny De Silva playing at Perth Glory showed. So, I can't really say too much on him because, like I said, I haven't seen that much of him. When I have seen him, though, he's been class. So, yeah, that's my Adelaide player. Brisbane Roar, Jake. I think there's one obvious one that stands out here.
They've got some good young players. They've got players like Brandon Borrello, who I think could potentially go to Europe in the future. If Luke Devere was a few years younger, I'd probably be mentioning him. But like, it's not like he can't go to Europe now that he's 27, but he's getting to the later sort of stages of his career. Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. I'm going to talk about as I choke on my air, Jamie McLaren. I think he'd probably be in Europe next season, to be honest. He's been fantastic every single week for Brisbane, giving the ball in the box, he'll score. He's on the edge of Socceroos, if not in the Socceroos squad. Like, he has been in the later Socceroos squad, but once everyone's fit, is he a member of the Socceroos squad? I'm not too sure just yet, but I think he... He's certainly a player that I think will be in Europe in probably next season, in my opinion.
Like you said, I probably wouldn't say he's in that, you know, top maybe 3, possibly 4 strikers for Australia right now. I think you've got the likes, you know, Juric and Giannu and Cahill. Probably missing someone here, but I reckon maybe they're all ahead of him.
George Howard.
Yeah, so Joey Katabian. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I agree. Jay McLaren's probably the main one here. If I had to go with someone else, though, I'd reckon Tommy Orr, if he can, from now, kick on with his performance today and really show the form he had when he left to go to Europe all those seasons back. I feel like he is a decent chance to go back to Europe. He just needs to be consistent and do what he's good at, which is crossing a ball and dribbling and running at defenders. So we'll see if he can keep this up for the rest of the season. Jake, Central Coast Mariners have a fair few young players on their list, which I, in my opinion, can definitely go to Europe. But Jake, who do you think can, though?
That's a fantastic question that you asked me there, Jordan. but I'm going to go, I think you're thinking that I'm probably just going to go with the standard, like campaign or something like that, because I'm a bit biased when it comes to Victory players. But I'm going to say Storm Roux. I think he is a future Socceroo, in my opinion. When he's been given the chance at Mariners, obviously he has been getting a lot of chances lately because Mariners aren't exactly a top club. And he's, I think, their captain now, or up there in the captaincy ranks for them. I think he's quality, and that's not just defensively as well. He offers a lot attacking-wise. He's pretty quick as well. I think I could potentially see him playing in Europe. Not like, obviously, I'm not talking like top leagues like the Bundesliga or EPL or anything like that, but I feel like he could be handy to like a League One sort of team or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think fucking Storm Roux is probably getting up there in regards to Australia's best right backs. And I'm pretty sure he can play left back as well, which, you know, a bit of versatility about him is always good. I do watch the Mariners quite often these days just because they're such a young, exciting team sometimes. I mean, he makes mistakes here and there, but for the most part, he's pretty positive, brings good energy to the right-hand side. Well, that's all you want from the right back. Defensively, very solid as well.
Even Paul Izzo, I reckon, because Paul Izzo is 21 years old, and I think he's been one of the better goalkeepers over the last few seasons, so I think he could be a good shout to potentially go to Europe, because nothing against Birigetti, but I rate Paul Izzo over Birigetti, so...
And Birigetti's in the EPL.
Exactly, although he hasn't played an EPL game, he's still a part of an EPL squad, and he's been on the bench a few times, so...
I'm gonna list them, because there's probably about seven people who I reckon can go to Europe. And that's the great thing about Central Coast. They produce such quality players, and they still are. Even if they're not being the best out on the pitch, they're still the young talent's amazing. I'll name them, but Harry Ashcroft, Adam Berry, Trent Bahaja, Paul Izzo, Jake McGing, Connor Payne, potentially, and Liam Rose and Storm Roux are all players who I can see potentially going to Europe. The pick of the bunch, I've had to choose one who I think is almost a dead-on certainty. In my opinion, is Adam Berry, because in my opinion, he is easily the best young player I've seen play for Central Coast Mariners, and that's a massive call because you've got the likes of Jedinak and Tom Rogic. Which, by the way, I didn't even think Tom Rogic was that good when he was in the A-League, but apparently he was.
Yeah, not bad. got picked up by Celtic.
But Adam Berry, I've watched this kid play probably 5-6 times this season, a couple of times last season when he played. He is literally the type of centre mid that you want. He's that box-to-box, offers a lot going forward, and he's also quite good defensively. And I wouldn't be surprised to see his name being linked to a lot of big European clubs in the future, because he is very young. He's only 19 years old. And
Harry Ashcroft's another one as well.
Yeah, and he's a he is good as well.
I think he's class as well. So I love watching Central Coast because they're not one of those, like, as much as I think they do need a player that, like, will draw in crowds, like if they got like a Tim Cahill or if they got like a big marquee. They do need a player that can draw in crowds. I love watching them because although they're not fantastic and they don't get results every week, they literally all over the pitch have young Australian talent. So, and I know how much you love watching young Australian talent as well. So,
I'm the pedophile of Australian football.
we'll steer clear of the potential chat, Jordan.
Melbourne City is the next one, Jake. Give me someone who you reckon you can go to Europe. There is a few names here.
I'm gonna keep it as Australian based as possible because it's easy to say. A few of the international players could easily crack it in Europe. And right now, I feel like City aren't exactly a team that are looking after the youth of Australian football. They've got great facilities and their youth team are good, but they're not exactly giving young players a massive crack because they're so based on players like Fornaroli and all that stuff. Like, nothing against that, but it's what they want to do. But if I have to choose one, and I think you're probably going to choose him as well, I'm going to go Bruce Kamau, just because he reminds me of A1 Mobile. And I'm not being racist in that sense, but he's literally the exact same player as A1 Mobile.
I think he is as well. I think the only thing difference between them, I think Bruce Kamau is technically a little bit better. I think that's his only thing.
They're better in their own senses. I think, like you said, yeah, I reckon Kamau is technically better, but I think Mobile offers a bit more. In the sense, like, if you put him in behind the defence, he's 110% going to be first to the ball. Like, and I'm not saying Kamau wouldn't be as well, but Kamau also, for how small they both are, Mabil's an absolute tank. Mabil has muscle.
Yeah.
But Kamau, not so much. Kamau gets pushed off the ball fairly easily. But I think Kamau is definitely a European prospect. He could follow down a sort of path like Mabil. He's following down as well, because I think one of those leagues perfect for him, like, that is Mabil's in at the moment, because, like, you've also sent me videos of the last few weeks of Mabil getting goals and assists in his league, so I think Kamau definitely could crack it in Europe. There's a few other players that have got too, like, I don't mind Retre as well, but I think if I have to choose one, I think Kamau's definitely. And if Corey Gamero was fit, and he wasn't getting struck by injury every single season, Corey Gamero would probably be in Europe right now. When he was at Sydney, he was fantastic. So I think he'd probably be in Europe right now if he wasn't getting injured every single time he got a crack.
He's always been class, and he proved it at when he was over at Fulham as well in the youth academy. Yeah, I agree. I think Bruce Kamau. I think, like you said, I was probably going to choose Bruce Kamau. He's a class player. Technically, I think he's better than Mabil. Mabil, like you said, a little bit stronger. And I think the Mabil being over in the league years, I think it really helps him develop as a player. I think Kamau should look at going over to one of those type of leagues. I will just mention Luke Bratton. I think he went over to England for a little bit, didn't quite cut it. But personally, I think he's probably one of the best defensive central midfielders in the league. And I think he probably does deserve another crack in Europe, albeit he is now 26. So by the time he does go to Europe, unless he moves next month, he will be 27 years old, which isn't really an ideal sort of age that European clubs look at. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. The next team here, Melbourne Victory. As you go to the toilet, I'll talk about the first player from Melbourne Victory first. A couple of young talent in their squad. Realistically, probably the one that stands out the most for me would be young right back Jason Guerrier, or Guerrier. I've literally never known how to pronounce his name, but I'm pretty sure it's Guerrier. Yeah, 23 years young. Class player, can play in that central defensive position or right back, and he just keeps proving his rise, his meteoric rise to one of Australia's best right backs. With that, caps in the squad now and stuff like that with the Socceroos. Other players who I might look at. Marco Rojas could get another gig back in Europe, and possibly James Choisi if he learns how to shoot, Jake. What about you?
I think there's obviously a lot, and like, I'm just scrolling through Victory Page right now and I saw Sebastian Pasquale, so that made me a little bit upset. But I'm going to go Nick Ansell. He's only 22 years old. It doesn't feel like that in the slightest because he's been in the Victory system for a good 5 years now. I remember he got his debut for Victory when he was 18 years old. Yeah, I think he's fantastic. He's just got to look at it after his injuries. Like, there's not much you can do about it. If you're injury prone, you're injury prone. There's nothing you can do about that realistically. You can build up as much muscle or core strength or whatever as you possibly can. But at the end of the day, if you're injury prone, it's going to catch up with you anyway. and that's been proven with a lot of Australian footballers, and it's been proven with a lot of Australian sportsmen as well, that Australia don't exactly have the people behind the scenes, like the physios and stuff, like the clubs in like Germany and England do, which is frustrating. And I feel like if Ansell stayed fit throughout a whole season and played 27 games, 90 minutes every single week, 27 games, he'd be in Europe next season.
Mm.
He is. I honestly rate him as a future Socceroo. He's still only 22 years old, so he's still got a lot left in him. He doesn't turn 23 until February next year as well, so it's not like he's edging right on 23 or he's like basically turning 23 tomorrow. He's still got 2 months till he's 23, so he's still young. And
you can count. I love it.
And he's class. He's been a part of a lot of interesting unvisual defences, but he's played a few seasons alongside Matthew Delpierre, who I think is has been the best centre-back that has played in the A-League so far. So he would have learnt a lot off Delpierre, and he can only learn more off players if he went to Europe as well. And if he got a crack in a Socceroos squad or something like that, I know he's been a young Socceroo. I think I saw a few weeks ago when I was talking to a mate about him, he's played this third most games for the young Socceroos or something like that as a defender in young Socceroos history or something like that. So it's fucking outrageous. So I rate him. I don't know if you rate him all that much, but I think he's definitely up there in the talks for a potential move to Europe in a few seasons. He's just got to get the consistency. Like I said, if he plays 27 games plus 90 minutes every single week, then I think he'll definitely be in talks for a European move.
Oh, no, I definitely rate him. I agree with you. I think he's up there. He's one of the most exciting young players in the league, to be honest. Newcastle, and we'll try to get through these a little bit quicker as we edge over the hour mark. Newcastle, I mean, everyone knows who I'm going to say, Devante Clute.
Yeah, I'm going to say the exact same. There are young players like we've touched on before, like Hall and Naboo as well. But Jack Duncan, I don't really,
23 as well.
But I don't know if Naboo or Hall would crack it in Europe. I think they could potentially get a European move eventually. I don't think they would crack it because Hall couldn't even crack it at Sydney. So I don't know if that's something to do with Sydney as a club or their structure or something like that. But if Hall can't really crack it at Sydney, then I don't know how he's going to go with a European move. But definitely, Devante Clute. I think I can definitely see him playing in Europe, not even like later in his career. I think within the next few years, definitely.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Massimo Luongo in a way. It's definitely be good things for Australia. Yeah. Perth Glory. Yeah, look, there's a few players in here which I could think could get a gig. I will give an honourable mention here too. Adam Taggart, who I think is still a very good striker, but Joshy Risden, in my opinion, is the main man from Perth Glory, Jake.
Yeah, I can't look past Risden either. I think Taggart as well, like you said, is definitely a player that I think will eventually go back to Europe. He's just got to, as well as Nick Ansell, really, get on top of his injuries and try and stay fit consistently. But, yeah, Josh Risden, I can definitely see Josh Risden in Europe, like I said, with Devante Clute and a few other players as well. I can see him in Europe probably next season, to be honest. Because he could go down the path that Gersbach's gone down. Like, I know he's a bit older than Gersbach, but he's not that much older. Like, what is he? He's 24 years old, so he's not, like...
Not old.
He's not past it. Like, he could go to Europe right now and play 6-7 solid seasons in Europe. And I think he's ready. I don't think he should, like, as much as I want players to stay in the A-League, I don't think he should stay in the A-League too much longer because he's at that peak where it's probably good for him to move as soon as possible. And with how Perth have been playing, I would not blame him in the slightest for moving as well. And he's living in Perth as well, so I wouldn't really blame him for wanting to leave Perth.
Sydney FC. The players here that stand out to me will probably be Bernie Abini and Brandon O'Neill, Jake.
Yeah, well, Bernie Abini, definitely. I think he's done the right thing in coming back to Australia for a year or two just to get consistent football again. I don't rate him that highly, but there's potential for Ryan Grant maybe, but he's already 25 years old.
So he's probably a bit past it, but yeah, can't really look too much past Bernie Abini. I think he's up there with one of the best wingers, if not, well, he's not the, but he's one of the best wingers in the league. He hasn't really had that much of a crack this season with injury, but when he does get a crack, he's definitely going to add to Sydney FC's firepower. And like you said, Brandon O'Neill as well, when he was getting consistent football last season, he was one of the better central midfielders in the league. So, yeah, I can't look past too many others because I'm just scrolling through their squad right now and they haven't got too many standout young Australians in the team.
Wellington Phoenix, just the one player. Yeah, Rolly Bonavazia probably is the only one that can maybe see going back to Europe. He's only 25 years old and he's a clear standout in that Wellington Phoenix side, in my opinion, Jake.
Glenn Moss. can you imagine Glenn Moss getting picked up.
Manchester United.
I'm going to go a bit left field here. I'm pretty sure he's a Kiwi. Yeah, he is. Hamish Watson. I think he's been pretty good for Wellington this year. Although they haven't had a fantastic season, he's definitely been one of their standout better performers this season, in my opinion. So if I have to go for one, it'd probably be him. But like you said as well, Rolly Bonavasi is up there as well. Like in my career modes that I play on FIFA, he always gets picked up by a championship team or a Premier League team. So he's obviously no shithouse. And Louis Fenton as well. He had a standout season a few seasons ago. He's been knocked up with injury a little bit, but I think Louis Fenton's definitely a player that could get a move to Europe eventually.
Last team here, Western Sydney Wanderers. In my opinion, have not got too much young talent on their list. They've got a fair few decent players that could crack it overseas in regards to, you know, Nico Martinez, Jumpai, Mitch Nichols, possibly, if he got given a chance. I will say one name here, Aspro.
Yeah, I was looking into.
He's, like Ansell, probably one of the best young defenders in the league, one of the best centre-backs, sorry, in the league. And from what I know of him, he can also move up into that sort of defensive midfield role. So, I don't know, in my opinion, Aspro, he played a lot of games last season, I think, or maybe not, I don't remember. I feel like he's played a fair few games one season. Maybe it wasn't too sure, to be honest. I was looking at the stats, it didn't look like it.
One player I'm going to say is Lachlan Scott, and he's only played two games for Western Sydney, but he's only 19 years old, and he's only played 16 minutes this season so far. But
He started like 2 weeks ago.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. It says average minutes per game. That's fair enough. Yeah, he's been pretty good, in my opinion. He got a goal a few weeks ago, I'm pretty sure, as well. So it's not exactly like, oh, he's played two games, he's going to be a world beater, but if he gets consistent football, even if it's with their youth team or something, and they develop him properly, then you never know. He's shown glimpses that he's potentially A-League standard, and then who knows where he can go from there, because he's only 19 years old, so never know, Jordan.
Well, that's all we will talk about for that for then, because I wanted to get in some sort of discussion. We will quickly run our eye over this week's fixtures before we go well over time. Friday night, Newcastle versus Adelaide, big game. Newcastle, obviously, very good last week, or this week, sorry, whatever you want to call it. Adelaide United need to get a victory. I don't know what the result's going to be, Jake. I'll be honest, I'm looking at past history. This game has never had more than two goals in it since 2015 in January when Adelaide beat them 7-0. So, since then, we've had three draws and two wins to Adelaide. So, Newcastle have not beaten Adelaide in a long time. I'm going to say it's a draw.
Yeah, I think it would be a draw as well. I think both teams are trying to find that right gauge of consistency. Definitely Adelaide more so than Newcastle. Because Adelaide probably rate themselves as a top six team this year, which they're definitely proving not to be. But yeah, they need to start putting points on the board, and I think they'll only get one this week.
Wellington Phoenix versus Western Sydney Wanderers. Wellington with a 3-0 win on the weekend, Western Sydney with a 3-0 loss on the weekend. I think they will want to bounce back, but I'm not sure if they will against Wellington, who I think are a little bit inspired at the moment to prove that they aren't as shit as everyone thinks they are after Ernie Merrick left. Albeit they only beat Central Coast, who, no disrespect to Central Coast, they're probably one of the weaker teams in the league. I think Wellington are actually a decent shout to get a win here against Western Sydney. Jake?
Yeah, they probably are. I think they'll go into the game probably favourites as well. But
not currently, based on betting.
But I think it's going to be a draw as well. I think both teams are like the last game that we just mentioned as well. They're sort of trying to find that right gauge of consistency. Western Sydney is showing signs that they're a top six team, top four team potentially as well. And Wellington definitely have a good squad, but aren't really clicking apart from this week against Central Coast. So I think it's going to be one of those games where it's frustrating for both teams and probably ends in a 1-1 draw.
The derby, Saturday night, Melbourne City hosting, well, can't really say hosting, but playing against Melbourne Victory at Amy Park. History between these two sides does suggest that City have the most recent probably success between these two sides. Victory haven't beaten City since October last year, but they will be keen to get that victory after winning on the weekend 3-0, great fashion. Melbourne City have two draws on the trot. City slightly better this season, albeit Victory. Owen, I think it's equal points, or maybe one less points with a game in hand, potentially. Big chance of Victory to go above City, but I think it's going to be a draw, Jake.
Yeah, well, I'm never confident going into a derby. I think we're the better team, but I think City have proven as well over the last few years that they always turn up for derbies, no matter what is happening throughout the season. They even turned up for a derby when they were struggling and Victory were unbeaten. After about 12 games. So no matter what, they always turn up for a derby. So I'm just going to go a draw because I think we'll win, but I think City always, like as I said, always turn up for derby. So I'm just going to go a draw.
There's not too much value this week, so I'm going to put my bet 365 bet of the week on this game to be a draw at $3.40. I think it's a decent shout. The next game after my fixture list just goes absolutely weird. Perth Glory host Sydney FC. Perth will be wanting to bounce back, and I think, Jake, they actually have a decent chance to get something away from Sydney FC. They don't have to travel at all this week. They're playing two consecutive home games. Sydney FC got the big trip up to Perth, which is never fun. Jake, so I think it might be a draw.
Yeah, well, follow the trend of this week so far, and I think it's going to be a draw as well. I think Sydney may struggle with the travel a little bit, and Perth are going to want to try and bounce back after a very poor start to the season. So I think it will be a draw.
That's four draws in a row we've all predicted. except Wellington. We said Wellington might beat Western Sydney.
I don't think it's going to change this game either.
I think it will. I think Brisbane Roar is going to get the chocolates against the Central Coast Mariners side that is having a little bit of different form at the moment. Two losses on the trot for them. Brisbane Roar have broken their 1-1 drought, or not drought, I don't even know what it's called, their win drought, I don't know. 4-0 win against Adelaide United today. History does suggest Brisbane have been the dominant side against Central Coast. The last time Brisbane did not win this fixture was back in December 2014, which was a 3-3 draw. Since then, Brisbane have won the last four consecutive meetings between these two sides. And I think Brisbane's going to take that form into this game with a win.
Yeah, well, I'm going to follow my trend, and I think every single game this week is going to be a draw, because I'm just going to go off my logic from a few weeks ago that Brisbane always struggle when they travel. They're a really good team at home, but when they play away from home, they usually struggle a little bit. So, and I think Central Coast are a lot better than they've shown over the last few weeks. So I think it's going to be a draw.
Well, that wraps up today's episode, Jake, of JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour, Episode 7, brought to you on Audio Boom every Tuesday of the A-League season, unless games get in the way and we have to change it, like we are with the EPL podcast this week. If you're not following us on Facebook, go do that. Give us a like. We are always there. We had a lot of discussion points during the week on our page. I don't think any were related to football except Tim Cahill, question maybe. Apart from that, we are always open to chat. So do that. Give us a like on Facebook. Follow us on Audio Boom and stay up to date. And get around Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who played another blind in the EPL last night. But until next week, we'll see you then.
And like Borussia did, have a nice. I'm on top of the world.